And politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great day when President Biden said during an appearance at an ice cream shop in New York City that there would, he hoped, be a ceasefire in the Israel-Hamas conflict by next Monday as the death toll in Gaza continues to rise and approaches 30,000 people. That, of course, is 30,000 people, many of whom, perhaps most of whom, represent Hamas combatants. The Israeli reaction to the so-called ceasefire, the ice cream shop ceasefire, we will find out. Meanwhile, there will be people voting in Michigan tonight in the Democratic primary. There's also a Republican primary. President Trump is not considered to have serious competition in the Michigan primary. And as for President Biden, there's a group that's intending to get 10,000 votes who would vote for a non-committal slate to show their opposition to President Biden's support for Israel in the ongoing war. Michigan is the home of some 200,000 Arab Americans, and it is considered a must-win state for both Biden and Trump. It's a very decisive swing state that went for Donald Trump in 2016 by 10,000 votes. Then it went for Joe Biden by 150,000 votes in 2020. How will it go in 2024? That will help decide the outcome. And the outcome of world struggle could be involving the quiet progress of North Korea in building up its military resources while the world has been focused on other concerns like Ukraine and like the Hamas-Israel war. We'll be speaking with Gordon Chang about that. And concerning the Hamas-Israel war, we'll be speaking to law professor John Yoo, one of the leading conservative scholars in the world on law, and including international law and the laws of war. The laws of war and the war of Israel and Hamas, we'll be speaking to John Yoo about that. And first, we're going to talk to Governor Chris Sununu coming up about the ongoing campaign of Nikki Haley, who he supports very strongly. And the governor of New Hampshire will tell us what it is that Nikki Haley hopes to achieve. Meanwhile, there are all sorts of difficult achievements that need to be made to keep the government operating. I mean, with everything else going on in the South Carolina primary over the weekend and an ongoing discussion about the dissatisfaction of 70% of Americans with a choice between Donald Trump and Joe Biden, basically the American people have the attitude toward both of those candidates, throw the old grumpy bums out. Peggy Noonan, in her column over the weekend for the Wall Street Journal, said this is a like a race between old cranky, that would be Biden, and old crazy, that would be Donald Trump. Donald Trump has an unusual way where he seems to be intending to win over a majority of black votes. That effort, as Eugene Robinson identifies it, would be to try to identify himself as a criminal and say, yes, the blacks will support me because just like them, I am wrongly accused of all kinds of criminal activities. Is that working? Will the tennis shoes do the trick? We will get to that. Meanwhile, a partial government shutdown is looming. That comes up Friday, and then the entire government shuts down on March 8th if they don't get something done. And this is very difficult because the House of Representatives isn't even in session. They don't come back till tomorrow. And a partial government shutdown is looming unless lawmakers can hammer out the details of a spending agreement, while critical military aid for Ukraine remains in limbo. Senator Michael Bennet of Colorado, a Democrat, moderate Democrat, but a member of the Intelligence Committee, was extremely powerful in what he had to say about the importance of what is going on in Ukraine. He just returned from Ukraine. And Speaker Mike Johnson is facing, again, one of those possibilities where he could choose to make some kind of deal with the Democrats to keep the government running and to keep the ammunition that we need to send to Ukraine flowing rather than seeing a tragic end to the war and a deeply, deeply regrettable and very damaging victory for Vladimir Putin. Now, how do you avoid that? Well, one of the ways you avoid that, according to all of the difficulties that we have right now, is trying to deal with the other party, which, honest to goodness, is not like trading with the enemy, for God's sake, when you're talking about preventing a risen again Soviet Union from winning a war against a democratic ally of the United States. President Biden is calling congressional leaders to the White House as the clock ticks down toward a partial government shutdown Friday night, and Ukraine aid package remains stuck. This is from the Wall Street Journal. They had that meeting in the Oval Office. That was President Biden with Vice President Harris, Speaker of the House Mike Johnson, the Republican Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, Republican Leader of the Senate, the Majority Leader of the Senate, the Democrat Chuck Schumer, and the Minority Leader in the House, Hakeem Jeffries. So they were all there. And how did that go? Well, they didn't do what they needed to do. Funding for the Transportation Department and several other agencies expires Friday night, which would affect some housing, food, and veterans programs. The rest of the government expires after March 8th. House Speaker Mike Johnson told Republican colleagues last Friday night that lawmakers should expect to vote to finalize spending levels for federal agencies whose funding expires this week. But Republican infighting in the House, which doesn't return to session until tomorrow, raises the prospect that a temporary shutdown may be unavoidable. Like his predecessor as Speaker, Republican Kevin McCarthy, Johnson has to decide whether to cut a government funding deal with the Democrats that might risk costing him his job. Along with keeping the government open, Biden has made it a priority to get billions of dollars of fresh aid to Ukraine as its war against Russia enters its third year. Jake Sullivan, Biden's national security advisor, said on Meet the Press Sunday that if Congress doesn't approve the aid, it would yield an outcome that Vladimir Putin would love to see, which is the United States not stepping up to its responsibility. Is that a done deal? We'll hear what Biden had to say just hours ago, and the word from Speaker Mike Johnson. And what about that pending ceasefire deal that President Biden seems to promise for next week? We'll get to that and more on The Medved Show.
Your daily dose of debate.
I think you are the greatest debater on radio today.
The Michael Medved Show. More of Michael Medved in a moment.
And on the Michael Medved Show, there are so many people who are concerned as to who is winning the political battle here in the United States? Is it Donald J. Trump? Is it Joseph Robinette Biden? Is it Nikki Haley? Is it basically chaos? There's a senator from Colorado, Michael Bennett. Remember, he ran very briefly for the presidential nomination back in 2020. Didn't get very far. But he is a good guy. He's very strong on foreign policy and on American defense and security. And Michael Bennett says the one who's really winning the battle here of a divided and dysfunctional American politics is Vladimir Putin. He was on MSNBC and talking about the looming government shutdown and unless the lawmakers can hammer out a deal. And while critical military aid for Ukraine remains completely in limbo. Here is what Senator Michael Bennett had to say with Andrea Mitchell on MSNBC.
And he has earned this. You know, the Ukrainian people have exceeded any reasonable expectation or even unreasonable expectations of what they could have achieved. They've driven Putin off half the land he took. They've won battle after battle after battle. They've thrown, as you know well, they've thrown Putin out of the Black Sea without even having a navy of their own. And they're fighting not just for Ukraine. They're fighting for democracy. They're fighting for the West. And we can't even keep the government open here. You know, I wonder if Winston Churchill were treating this the way that we're treating it on the lead up to World War II, how well he would be remembered by history. You know, we have an amazing moment right now to show what the outer edge of our political insanity is, and that's riding to the rescue among a group of people who have been willing to fight and die for the sake of democracy. And there were 22 Republicans. It's very important for people to know this. 22 Republicans in the United States Senate who cast that vote 2 weeks ago to send Ukraine this aid, who overcame the objections of Donald Trump and said, we're going to do the right thing for our national security. We're going to do the right thing for democracy. We're going to do the right thing for our children's future and our grandchildren's future. And the idea that the House is still spinning its wheels on this government shutdown, no one in America could describe for you what purpose is being served by their threat of this government shutdown. But I can tell you, having seen the Ukrainian people literally scraping off a parking lot so that they could put graves there for the bodies of people who have died on the front. This was in Lviv when we were there. They're wondering what's going on here.
Okay, and what is indeed going on? What's going on is at least there was a meeting today. In the Oval Office, there was a fire crackling in the Oval Office fireplace. I've seen that there. I had the great privilege of being in the Oval Office with President Bush a couple of times, as President George W. Bush. And he had his dog, who was not a dangerous dog. It was not Commander. There was no threat of being bitten or chewed by President Bush's dog. His dog was named Barney, if you remember. And he was an extremely friendly, very genial, non-threatening Scots Terrier. Okay, that was then. This is now. And before the meeting began, and this is a meeting of all the congressional leaders of both parties with the President of the United States to try to prevent a government shutdown, which is about the last thing in the world that we need right now, and about one of the most foolish political strategies ever developed. It always has been. It always will be. Shutting down the government accomplishes nothing. Nothing. But here was President Biden speaking briefly to reporters before the meeting began.
I want to thank the leaders for being here today. We got a lot of work to do. Figure out how we're going to keep funding the government, which is an important problem, an important solution we need to find, and I think we can do that. And Ukraine, I think the need is urgent. I hope we get to speak to that a little bit. I think the consequences of inaction every day in Ukraine are dire. I've been speaking to some of our our G7 partners, and you just got back, Chuck. They're very concerned, and also we need to, in terms of supplemental, we need to deal with the Israeli portion. But that also contains a significant portion having to do with humanitarian assistance into the Palestinian area, which I think is important. And we have to replenish the air defenses for Israel, and we have to work on making sure they don't face the threat from they can face the threat from the from what's going on in the Middle East, not just from Hamas, but from Iran. And and government funding, I'm sure you guys had all of that all taken care of, but all kidding aside, I think that it's Congress's responsibility to fund the government.
Okay, it is the responsibility to fund the government because they're talking by March 8th. It's also the defense budget. I mean, this is nutty. The Speaker of the House, who has been a big holdup, said this to the press after the White House meeting. This is Speaker Mike Johnson of Louisiana, the Speaker of the House of Representatives, Republican leader in the House. Clip 14.
We had a couple of meetings there. It was frank and honest. I think we need more frank and honest conversations on Capitol Hill. So I was happy to participate in this. We did that as a group, and then I had a one-on-one for a period of time with the president, just he and I in the Oval Office. Let me say this. When I showed up today, my purpose was to express what I believe is the obvious truth, and that is that we must take care of America's needs first. When you talk about America's needs, you have to talk first about our open border. I've been, I believe, in maybe 20-something states over the last several weeks, going around the country, appearing at events with my colleagues, and we're hearing from the American people of all parties and all persuasions in all cities and all states who feel this acutely. They understand the catastrophe at the border is affecting everyone. And it is top of mind for all the American people for that reason. So I brought that issue up repeatedly today in that room and again one-on-one with the president.
Well, this is, again, nutty. It's the only way to describe it. Because they had worked out a bill. It was bipartisan. It was supported by Republicans, a majority of Republicans, if you count the Republicans in the Senate and the Republicans in the House. A majority of Republicans supported a toughening of the border bill. And that was also going to go along with the funding for Ukraine and the funding for Israel and the emergency funding for Taiwan. All of that was a package. And the Republicans had promised to support it. But then Donald Trump said no, and the Republicans backed away. So what happens here, and what happens next in the ongoing campaign? Governor Sununu of New Hampshire coming up.
Show.
Christopher T. Sununu is the 82nd governor of the state of New Hampshire. That's the live free or die state. He is currently serving his fourth term in 2020. He broke the all-time state record, receiving more votes than any other candidate in the history of New Hampshire. It's a long history, too. Chris Sununu has been traveling the country campaigning for Nikki Haley, who, currently she's running second in the drive for the Republican nomination for President of the United States. You just got back from Washington, D.C. There was the National Governors Association. We talked about that a little bit on the air. So you had a chance to meet with President Biden. Fairly universal concern with the National Governors Association on the border issue. Is that right?
Without a doubt. I mean, Republicans and Democrats alike all expressed a lot of concern. It is the number one issue, whether you're looking at it from a national security standpoint, an issue on the burden of services, and something has to be done. Now, the I'll sum up the long conversations with both Secretary Mayorkas and President Biden as a group. And I appreciate it was an open conversation, right? It wasn't just you say this and you say that. They were willing to kind of listen to all sides. They kept pushing on, well, we need to pass this bill sitting before Congress. But at the same time, they also acknowledged that the chances of that happening are virtually nothing. So I think all of us as governors, which are good managers, said, okay, if plan A, if that was your plan A and that's not going anywhere, what's plan B? What's plan C? Right? You have a lot of policies you've enacted. What ones can you reverse? What ones can we undo? What changes can be made that way? They kept kind of avoiding that. Well, the lawyers say this and the lawyers say that, which I think most governors giggled at because, you still have to manage. You don't get threatened by lawyers. Of course, people are going to sue you. That happens all the time. But something has to change. And that was the universal message. That gave me a lot of confidence that this is a real issue. I think I think they know it's going to be a very significant political issue in 24, hence Biden finally, deciding to show up at the border. I think he's going Thursday or something this week. I mean, to date, I've literally been at the border for two trips, two full days, really three full days over two trips, and I've been at the border more than Biden and Kamala Harris combined. That's a problem, right? That is a real problem. You can't have the biggest national issue and they're not showing up. So they're worried more from a political standpoint. That's what worries me. They should just be worried from an American security standpoint, a humanitarian standpoint, because what's happening down there, it's not humane. It's not just. It's an absolute disaster. So, we'll see where it all goes, but I think we all made the message clear. Something has to move.
Okay, and in terms of something has to move, the Nikki Haley campaign. There's a Michigan primary tonight. There isn't much of a fight, it appears, on the Republican side in Michigan. But then coming up on March 5th, 2024, Super Tuesday, 16 states and one U.S. territory. Is Nikki Haley, your candidate for president, going to win any of those contests?
Well, I hope so. I mean, there's no doubt she's putting the work in. She's doing the retail politics. She's still raising money. She has strong ad buys in a lot of these states. So she's not just showing up. She's actually putting real kind of political muscle on the ground to drive the vote out, understanding that in most of these states, there's really been no campaigning. All the campaigning is basically the earned media. And look, for what it's worth, Trump is does very well with earned media in that that's all the media wants to talk about. They say his name 1,000 times. That pumps him up. He's played this victimization card to his benefit. And I think, both the media and the kind of the liberal establishment, as much as the more they try to attack him, the more his poll numbers go up and he's loving it. So at the end of the day, that's, I think, our frustration as Republicans, right? I mean, it's not that I'm so much super anti-Trump. I'm just very pro-Republican Party. I want Republicans to win. He's an anchor, right, on the whole ballot. So he's going to cost us congressional seats or Senate seats or governorships. He's been doing that for years. He costs us losses. I'm tired of losing. I'm tired of losers. I just want to win to get actual stuff done. So that's why one of the reasons I'm so passionate about Nikki Haley, because she's not just some alternative. She comes with this incredible background, this incredible experience as governor, as a Tea Party conservative with her international experience. All the pieces line up to say, wow, that if you had to whiteboard out what you want to see in a president, that's it right there. But it is obviously hard to kind of go against the incumbent of the party, the standard bearer of the party. But look at the numbers. 40-45% in some of these states don't want Trump. And those are Republicans. Those aren't just the general public. Those are Republicans that don't want Trump. That doesn't bode well for November. That doesn't bode well when you look at independents, suburban moms, young people. Those folks we need back into the party to win in November, they're not coming back with him. So and then, if I may, the cherry on top of this problem is the RNC. So now the RNC is going to be run by Trump people. They're awful at fundraising. They have almost no cash on hand right now. All the big donors are going to sit on the sidelines and not help the Republican Party as a whole if Trump were the nominee. So if you want to win as Republicans, there's only one solution. That's going with Nikki Haley. And so she's going to keep pounding hard, making the case, and hopefully getting some decent results come Super Tuesday.
There was a Joe Cunningham, who's a former congressman from South Carolina, is now with the No Labels organization. And he was talking right the other day, yesterday, about Nikki Haley running as an independent third-party candidate somehow with no labels. You think that's a good idea?
No, I don't think that's going to come to fruition. Look, Nikki's going to work hard to get the nomination. She's a Republican. I would never speak for her, but I've never heard any even hint of that at all. She is solely focused on being the Republican nominee. She's a Republican at heart. She's a strong conservative. There's really no other path there that I think she would ever entertain.
In terms of... will she? She certainly is going to live up to her promise of keeping the campaign going and alive and dynamic and energetic all the way through Super Tuesday, March 5th. Is she committed to go on to the convention?
Well, I think from my understanding on the campaign, I'm not on the campaign per se, but my understanding is they're going to see how Super Tuesday fans out. They're spending a lot of their resources and money there. And then from there, you say, okay, what's our next move? What's the next pivot point? If we want to go on to other states, do we have resources? Are we collecting enough delegates to have an impact at the convention? How many states have we won? You kind of put all of that into the mix after the dust settles on Super Tuesday. So I don't think they've made any decision there. I wouldn't expect them to make any decision because, again, it's right now it's just 24/7 pounding the ground, doing the events and connecting with people. The more she does that, the more the numbers go up, right? So that's really, as a candidate, I can tell you, that's the only mindset. You really stick with the plan, the strategy, and kind of wait for that next inflection point to see what the next move is.
And the next move for Chris Sununu, looking forward to participating in a fall campaign. But in next January, you're for the first time in a long time, you're no longer governor of New Hampshire, right?
Well, that will be true. My thought is to, maybe we can pair up. We can do a show together, right? MedDev Sununu show, something like that. You can, obviously, your name would come first. You know, I could just be like the color guy.
Alphabetical
you know, I don't
order.
Know. You know. No, I don't know what's next for me. I mean, obviously, Yeah, for what it's worth, I guess we have a little experience and skill. I've put my 10,000 hours on the political side, but I got to get back to the private sector too. And I like helping businesses. You know, if there's anything in this country we've seen businesses keep stepping in giant political pitfalls. And a few have approached me and said, look, we need help not doing this, not stepping into these political landmines, avoiding and getting pulled down some of these avenues that are unnecessary. You know, making sure they stay out of the politics and sell the products or whatever it might be. So I've talked to a couple of different companies, you know, what might happen later, down the road. But I got a full-time job right now. I'm 24/7 being governor. I guess we'll kind of broach those opportunities sometime in January of next year.
And for the record, I love the idea of a Medved Sununu show. That's Chris Sununu, governor of New Hampshire. We will be right back on the Medved Show. And on the Michael Medved Show, inviting you to join today. This is ahead of any looming partnership with Chris Sununu, which he brought up, let the record show. But you can be part of everything Medhead. That means commercial-free, on-demand broadcast every day of the Michael Medved Radio Show on a podcast version. You can get our In the Light of History podcast commentaries, Call of the Week, movie reviews, the Medved History Store discounts, and much, much more. Also, there are literally hundreds of hours to stream every single audio program available in the Medved History Store. Hundreds of hours of insightful history programs about World War One. How'd we get involved in that war? Really, think about it. No, it wasn't the sinking of the Lusitania. That took place in 1915, and then we got in the war in 1917. How? Was it a mistake? That's one of the questions that are on the table. We also have a special program on Three Big Lies about Vietnam, about myths and misunderstandings about World War II, a whole history of the Revolutionary War, the origins of the Middle East conflict. What is the Arab-Israeli conflict really all about, going back all the way to the first war, the War for Israeli Independence in 1948-49. All of that is there. Just go to michaelmedved.com, click on the banner, and join us as a Medhead, part of the subscription service for this radio broadcast. Speaking of subscription services, we're talking about Speaker Mike Johnson, Speaker of the House of Representatives, who just had not only a big meeting with other congressional leaders and President Biden, he had, as the top-ranking Republican on Capitol Hill, a meeting with the top-ranking Democrat in the universe, that right now is Joseph Robinette Biden Jr. But the two of them got together in the Oval Office. And this is the way that Speaker Johnson described his meeting today with President Biden. Clip B.
The other big priority for our country, of course, is the funding of our government. And we have been working in good faith around the clock every single day for months and weeks and over the last several days, quite literally around the clock, to get that job done. We're very optimistic. I hope that the other leaders came out here and told you the same. We believe that we can get to agreement on these issues and prevent a government shutdown. And that's our first responsibility. You also heard, I'm sure, that there was discussion about the supplemental spending package. And I was very clear with the president and all those in the room that the House is actively pursuing and investigating all the various options on that, and we will address that in a timely manner. But again, the first priority of the country is our border and making sure it's secure. I believe the president can take executive authority right now today to change that, and I told him that again today in person, as I've said to him many times, publicly and privately over the last several weeks. It's time for action. It is a catastrophe, and it must stop. And we will get the government funded, and we'll keep working on that.
Okay, and there's still no explanation of why it was that the House of Representatives, other than an attempt to save Mike Johnson's job, why the House of Representatives got this very credible bill from the Senate, a bill that virtually all Democrats had voted for and half of the Republicans, more than half of the Republicans in the Senate had voted for. It was bipartisan. It was tough. It directed literally billions of extra dollars to border security, would have changed the asylum process, would have done a lot of things that all immigration hardliners support. And the House of Representatives refused to even bring it to a vote because it would have passed very clearly. And part of the difficulty here has to do with some of the people on the Republican side who were just totally opposed to saving Ukraine. And they really do lean pro-Putin. I think that's shameful. I think that's a problem. And the majority leader of the U.S. Senate, Chuck Schumer, the Democrat, he spoke about the get-together in the White House and their discussion about Ukraine aid and how that went earlier today. This is Majority Leader Chuck Schumer of New York, clip 15.
The meeting on Ukraine was one of the most intense I have ever encountered in my many meetings in the Oval Office. The four of us all together led, first person to speak was Leader McConnell. Well, the five of us, the President, the Vice President, Leader McConnell, Speaker, Leader Jeffries, and myself, made it so clear how vital this was to the United States. This was so, so important. And that we couldn't afford to wait a month or 2 months or 3 months because we would, in all likelihood, lose the war. NATO would be fractured at best. Allies would turn away from the United States. And the boldest leaders, the boldest autocrats of the world, the Putins, the Xis, the presidents of North Korea and Iran would be emboldened, thinking that the United States was this soft, fat country that lost its way and would take advantage. And so we said to the speaker, get it done.
Yes, get it done. History is looking over your shoulder. He was then asked what made this meeting so intense. And here is the response from Senator Schumer.
What made this meeting one of the most intense you've ever had?
The urgency of supporting Ukraine and the consequences to the people of America, to America's strength, if we don't do anything and don't do anything soon. I was so shaken by what I saw at the border. I was strengthened by the strength of Zelensky and the Ukrainian people and the Ukrainian soldiers, but shaken that here they are fighting without arms against a brutal dictator who will just do anything to kill them. And the intensity in that room was surprising to me. But because of the passion of the president, the vice president, leader Jeffries, Leader McConnell and myself, it was. And, you know, Johnson tried to answer and he made it clear he wants to do something on the border. But we made it clear to him, we can't tarry or the war could be lost. And second, we wanted to do border and have a tough, secure border plan, as we showed. We Democrats showed in the Senate. But he can't say it won't do Ukraine until we get border. He's tried to do border for 6 months and couldn't come up with a single Democratic vote.
Okay, this is truly problematic. And the other participant of the meeting, Hakeem Jeffries, the Democratic leader of the House, indicated that he was ready to go on the kind of deal that strengthened border security and that gave Ukraine and Israel and Taiwan the aid that they desperately need. This is clip 10.
It was an intense meeting. It was an honest meeting. And ultimately, it was a productive meeting. We discussed three issues. First, the need to avoid a government shutdown and to fund the government so that we can address the needs of the American people in terms of their health, their safety, and their economic well-being. We are making real progress on the appropriations bills that are scheduled to lapse on March 1st. And I'm cautiously optimistic that we can do what is necessary within the next day or so to close down these bills and avoid a government shutdown. At the same time, it may be important to come to an agreement that's bipartisan and anchored in common sense to extend the pending expiration of the 8 additional bills that are scheduled to lapse on March 8th so that good faith, tough negotiations can continue in the absence of a government shutdown.
In the absence of a government shutdown, which is just about the last thing we need right now. The Israeli Defense Forces have just announced that they took out a significant leader, not from Hamas, but from Hezbollah. A real client and a very bad guy affiliated with Iran. What does that mean? We will get to that and to much more. John Yoo, law professor on the laws of war and the war in Gaza in This Greatest Nation on God's Green Earth.